Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Okay, welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can join us once again, and look forward to talking about a lot of the news that's happened over the last week or so. I've got new articles out on the BAPlannerShow.com website that we can be going through here shortly. Before we get started, I would like to remind those that are listening that just because we mention certain tax strategies or certain opportunities to join other investors in a real estate private partnership syndication, that you should most assuredly check with your existing advisors, legal, accounting, tax, real estate advisors or mentors, etc., and make sure that they agree. If you think it's something you should be interested in, they agree. Do not take any action until you've done that, and hopefully those folks understand your existing facts and circumstances and can ascertain whether or not the opportunity or the strategy fits you accordingly. If you don't have existing advisors, you're more than welcome to go to our website, again, BAPlannerShow.com, where you will find a forms link down its middle page or so, just below the title, and to the right, you'll see forms and you'll see call. And if you will complete at least the first form, step one, client profile, then you are also welcome to go schedule a call if you'd like to discuss your facts and circumstances with us to see if we think we can sync up with helping you meet your goals and objectives. So, okay, well, with that said, let's get started on the current news. And I say current, these articles are for the most part all within the past week. There may be an article or two that goes back further in time. I review a lot of sources, and at times I don't pick up on something until it's later, but I do like to put the date, as you'll see when you look at the news page on the resources tab of BAPlannerShow.com. You'll see the date and the source, and hopefully I remembered to change the link when I copy the new article in. If I don't, just shoot me a text. And let me know. You can text me anytime during the show or after or before next week's show or the next show. Our next show will be Thursday of this coming week at 2 p.m. here on KSEV. And then we've also got a Friday show at 11 a.m. But in any event, you're welcome to text me at any time, 713-4255. 581-0195, and if you've got a question or if you've got a topic you'd like to see covered, or if you've got a correction on my articles link, whatever you need, you are welcome to text me at that number, and I'll do my best to get back to you, maybe real time if it's something of a nature that I want to discuss on the air currently. So, in any event, so if we go to that, to the news page on BAPlannerShow.com, first article is one regarding Wall Street's massive purchase of single-family homes over the last, I don't know, probably much as 2 years, and You know, it's the title of the article is Wall Street has spent billions buying homes. So I don't know. I think media blows these numbers out of proportion at times, but it's a lot of money, and it may be billions. I don't know. But if you look at what is going on, it's caught the attention of more than a few clients of mine that are realtors, and they would agree with this title. I'm sure they think it feels like billions, even if it's not, and it really put a damper on supply. As you know, in many markets, the supply is way behind demand, which has led to prices going through the roof in large measure. There's the median price of homes in most in most major markets has gone up it's gone up an insane amount. It's crazy. I think the median price in the Houston market is now over the 300,000 plateau. In some markets it's over 400,000, and you know, the problem is it takes a much higher income to qualify, which is why there's people that aren't buying homes. It's not just a supply issue, it's also their ability to qualify, which means if you're like many of my clients who are owners and investors in apartment buildings, your future bodes brighter, perhaps, than if you were building new homes. But in any event, we've got a couple other articles that'll shed some light about that. But with one quote here, and the article is, with homes and rents near record highs around the U.S., legislators and officials of all levels of government have become more active on housing issues. States have passed new measures to fund more affordable housing to allow builders to bypass local zoning laws and to make the eviction process more favorable to tenants. And so you're going to see some at least proposed legislation to curb the corporate large-scale buying of residential homes, because as Governor Abbott wrote on X last month, it seems to be distorting the market, making it harder for the average Texan to purchase a home. So be aware, you know, it's time for the politician, the hero, to ride in and save the day for the constituents, which usually means more problems. I don't want to say a disaster, but anytime government gets involved, I'm reminded of Ronald Reagan's famous expression, knock at your door and you open the door and the party tells you, we're from the government and we're here to help. And that's usually a good sign that matters are going to get worse, whatever the current topic might be. In any event, the other side, advocates for the single-family rental industry, such as the National Rental Home Council, they oppose any limitations or proposals to curb investors, because they believe rising prices are more of an undersupply of new construction than they are rents or sales prices of new homes. They also point to relatively low number of homes owned by institutional investors. Well, this is the old the old expression that I use week after week after week, that, you know, it all depends on which window of the room you're looking into. Everybody's got a perspective. Everybody's got an opinion. But the advocates for the single-family rental industry point to relatively low number of homes owned by institutional investors, defined as those companies with portfolios of 1,000 homes or more. And some research estimates these companies own 3 to 5% of American rental homes. So it's still a lot of homes, and I guess perhaps it's billions of dollars worth of homes. But at some point, the supply and the demand will equalize, and we'll see what happens. When's the last time our average median price of the home in the area you live in has gone down? It does happen. It's happened actually many times over a long period. It's not like the stock market, but the median price does go down on occasion. Not sure it's headed there right at the current moment, but in any event. And again, it really depends on where you're at. I know I mentioned some research estimates that the large institutional investors own 3 to 5%. But as an example of others, Atlanta is mentioned here, where nearly 11% of all rental homes in the five-county area that includes Atlanta, 11% are now owned by three real estate companies, according to some Georgia State University researchers. A 2022 analysis by U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development says that 21% of Atlanta rental homes are owned by some large institution. Now, that's a pretty big chunk, and I could definitely see where that would tend to skew certain things in the market. Let's see. Let's go do another article or so before we take our first break. I'm going to skip one of the articles, the article on cap rates. Let's come back to that. Let's go to the cities that posted the sharpest drop in apartment rents. Rents continued their downward slide in March. So this is, let's see, this article came out on May 1. So March is the most recent month that this group, this is on Globe Street, which is a data intelligence group. They gather sorted real estate studies. Let's see here. They are saying that year-over-year prices fell by 0.3 of, let's see, the way that I interpret this stat is 0.3 of 1%. And every size of unit was affected. Even so, the median rent of $1,722 was only $36 less than the peak seen in August 2022 and was $313 more than in March 2019 pre-pandemic, pointing to a resilient rental market, according to a new report from Realtor.com. The sharpest annual drops occurred in where else but Austin, really having problems, although this is really far from a major problem. It may turn into that depending on how fast some absorption occurs in Austin. Memphis, St. Louis, Atlanta, Miami, Phoenix, Nashville, Orlando, Tampa, and Cleveland metros have had the sharpest annual drops in rental rates. The declines range from 4.7% in Austin to 2.5% in Cleveland. They offer some good news for renters in many areas at a time when the Fed is worried about the rising cost of shelter as a component of inflation. Benefits are most likely to be felt outside expensive metro areas in the West and the Northeast. However, it warned, this is the folks doing the study, of continuing cost pressures as interest rates remain high and potential home buyers opt to continue renting, which that's going to be a while. If you look at and I don't have a current article. I'll try to get one maybe before Thursday's show. If you look at the Florida Atlantic University rent price ratio or index that they've generated, you'll see that the predictions that we're going to see a better rent in the rent-to-own scenario, the answer is going to be your lowest cost option is to rent. And I'll suggest that even if it's not a pure mathematical issue, the amenities that one can rent that come with that A-plus level apartment are much less expensive to acquire as a tenant than the equivalent home would be as a buyer. Anyway, softer rents in the South are evidence that more supply helps tame rising cost. And so that's, again, what comes with a lot of, currently a lot of units have made their way into the delivery phase of the development cycle. And it's going to take some absorption to get the prices back down. Get the prices back up to where those rents were just a short while ago. By region, March rents in the Midwest were flat, and apartments remain more affordable, but are at risk of declines as unemployment in the region rises. Chicago, 4.3%, Kansas City, Missouri, 3.4%, Indianapolis, 3.3%, saw strong rental growth, though the median rent in Chicago was still $1,000 lower than in New York or L.A. In contrast, the South, even with low unemployment and high demand for apartments, experienced a 1.5% fall in median rent compared to the prior year, the result of an inflow of new supply, as we just mentioned. Landlords in the West had something to smile about as the region emerged from 13 straight months of falling rents to achieve an annual increase of 0.4%. High home prices dwindling. High home prices, dwindling hope of lower mortgage rates, and the fear of rising unemployment discouraged home buying and helped push rents up, especially in expensive markets like San Diego and Los Angeles. Rents went up almost 3% in San Diego and 1.6% in L.A. So if you're looking at investing in apartments, you obviously want to be mindful of what's going on with the rental growth rate in each. I mean, it's not to say that anything stays the same forever, but at least you want to know going in to try to assess, you know, maybe a five-year view on where you end up, because the rental growth rate is a direct impact on net operating income. And net operating income combined with cap rates is essentially how you determine what you're going to get out of a transaction, at least the top line, when you exit. So all of these pieces work together, and if you had your choice, you'd obviously like to buy in a market where rental growth is still positive, and as we've just read, there are markets where that's the case. Okay, well, let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our first break, and we'll return momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well,
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I wanna be. Big dreams and fake dreams. And there are many just like me
with big dreams and fake dreams.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And for those of you just joining us, we were just discussing a couple articles regarding the apartment multifamily space, as well as single-family market with the Wall Street's billions and single-family rental homes and the impact that that's had on the supply and demand ratio. And then in the apartment space, we're looking at markets that have had the highest rate of drops or declines in apartment rent growth. Continuing on in the multifamily context, got two articles that are somewhat contradictory, but nonetheless, it's good to get opposing viewpoints. Let's see, this is the fifth article on the list at the moment this week. Investors weigh whether prices have hit bottom. And, you know, it's like any other, excuse me, any other investment. The trick, if we could be so lucky, is to buy at a time where the market is bottomed out. And, of course, that's very hard to do unless you're more savvy than the average magician, I guess I would say. But you still have to consider the fact that if you don't buy at the bottom, you're either buying ahead of time or behind time, right? Because prices will go back up. The sun will come out tomorrow. It's an old rule, I believe, that holds true, even in the apartment space. And so, you know, the beauty about apartments is for those that are well capitalized, the eventual return to stability for those that have you know, reasonable locations, reasonable amenity sets, strong leasing teams. There is money to be made in the apartment space either now or soon. And, of course, to the extent you can make money on the buy, that's great. But, again, everybody needs a place to lay their head at night. That creates a stream of rents, which in turn creates a stream of income. And unless you just really fall short on your due diligence in terms of understanding rental growth rates, cap rates, certain other assorted variables, occupancy, I could go down the list, but in any event, depending on the investor type, according to this article, again, from GlobeStreet.com, it's either time to buy or the time to wait for the market to hit bottom. Today is either the time to buy or the time to wait for the market to hit bottom. Private investors are more optimistic at the moment than institutional ones, and that would tend to make sense. I guess institutional investors tend to move a bit slower, although when they move, they may do take off or bite off a bigger chunk, as Blackstone did fairly recently. But speaking at the National Research and Investor Relations, or let's see, was this an event? Well, no, this gentleman is Senior Vice President, National Research and Investor Relations. But in any event, speaking at his firm's recent industry trends video, he said institutional investors, those operating major investment funds, have told him they believe the market still has a ways to go. So they're, again, a bit more conservative. They move slower. Private investors can and do often move faster, sometimes too fast. But institutional investors think prices are still going through a correction process, and they believe pricing could fall another 5 to 10% this year. That's a material amount of money in the multifamily space. I mean, when you look at the fact that it's not unusual to see Class C or Class C plus properties these days going for, I don't know, $180,000 to $200,000 a door, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 a door. Which is what 5 to 10% would work out to, that's a lot of money to make up if you're on the wrong end of that equation. As for private investors, according to Mr. Chang, they're generally more optimistic, and Chang said they were not trying to time the market, and their focus is on where the market will be in 5 years. Well, that's kind of what I just said. And that's, I know, as I invest, that's what I'm looking at. And, you know, the five-year view is when we hope to, by then, have been able to double our money in multifamily. And for those of you that may be sitting on the fence and you never have dipped your toe into the multifamily pond, now's a good time to start at least familiarizing yourself with how we analyze multifamily, the math involved. After all, real estate is beyond location, location, location. It's math, math, math. And if you can understand the math behind rental growth rates and cap rates and equity multiples, internal rate of return, et cetera, you're able to ascertain whether or not a particular investment will suit your objectives. There are definitely challenges and headwinds, according to Mr. Chang, but investors are sharpening their pencils, and they're taking lots of swings at deals to land at least a few that will deliver results. He said that several of them told him that if the deal pencils today, in other words, if the deal makes sense, or if it's even close to a break-even right now, it only gets better over time, and they believe they'll be able to refinance when rates go down. Well, you know, there's a lot of, if you backed up 2 years, 2.5 years ago, there were a lot of investors or syndicators that thought that, and they bet wrong in many cases. But in any event, as for investors who are selling properties, one told Mr. Chang that even though one of his properties is profitable, it just hasn't met his expectations. Well, again, back up 5 years and look forward and see if you like what you see right now. And it's very difficult in some cases to sell or refinance a multifamily property. So this investor indicated that he's selling the property to free up the capital, then plans to reinvest the money into a different property with more upside potential. So he's going to dollar cost average, I guess, in the context of buying and selling at multiple points in time to achieve some sort of average that he's looking to attain. So let's see. So investors are basically clearing off their weakest assets so they can redeploy that capital and bolster their overall yields. You know, the part of the problem with these types of sales, and I think I've got another article coming up here that'll mention this, it's hard to get good comparables, good comps on properties when you've got some distress selling, or what I'm going to call near distress. If you're still kicking in the multifamily market, you could well be in a near distress situation where you're not covering your debt service, or you're close to that point, and you're looking to unload the property so you can unload a mortgage payment, essentially. So if there's any way out of that 3-year bridge debt that you have that you can't refinance, you're looking to take advantage of it. Let's see. It says for they're talking about the office market here, which that is not something I want to get into. The office market's got a long way to go, I think. In many markets, including the Houston and Dallas areas. For other property types, such as apartments, the greatest price softening is occurring in the metros, the list that we just mentioned earlier where the rental growth rate is declining. But they're occurring in the metros that were priced most aggressively in 2021 and 2022. Several of those markets have seen cap rates increase by 100 to 150 basis points over the last few years, but properly priced assets are still getting strong activity. Mr. Chang says one large apartment community had 43 offers and sold at a 5.5% cap rate, well below the current lending rate. So that's a negative leverage deal that went through. So a 5.5% cap rate, that's that would seem to indicate it's a fairly strong property, and the fact that the cap rate is below the lending rate would seem to indicate that a buyer could get a loan or have a reasonably good chance of getting a loan. Let's see, although there's a broad consensus that industrial will likely outperform over the long term, the significant wave of big box industrial development has dampened investor enthusiasm, so that market is starting to be oversupplied. Let's see, well, what it adds up to, Chang says, is that prices have bottomed in at least some property types. Pricing on unanchored retail centers as well as neighborhood and community rental center retail centers appear to be nudging higher, but it's still too early to tell if this is a bump in the road or an actual transition point. I would tell you that until interest rates start coming down, this is more of a bump, is what I would suggest. And I understand the latest jobs report just yesterday, I believe, seems to give some hope, some additional hope that maybe we'll have a rate cut, not maybe in the near future, but certainly well before the end of the year. Interest rates still play a significant role in pricing trends. If interest rates rise, it could once again stall investor enthusiasm. If interest rates fall, investor competition may heat up. But in any event, let's go ahead and take our last break, and we'll pick up with a few more articles when we return.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and we've been going over assorted news articles talking about the multifamily space as well as single family and, you know, real estate still remains a strong investment class for those that are seeking to increase their retirement wealth. And, you know, I know a lot of the folks that connect with us are looking to take control of their retirement monies, and they're looking for something that they can invest in that has the ability to exercise control much more so than stocks and bonds, mutual funds, things that Wall Street has to offer. And, you know, for some people, I suggest that is a better option. For others, you know, you might be better off staying in the market. I mean, I look at how, you know, some people really don't want to be active, and I don't mean you got to get out of bed every morning to go run the old Class C apartment project that can make a lot of money when it's rehabbed, has its amenity sets brought up to date, rents raised to a more of a market rate. Those properties are like gold when it comes to the ability to refinance them several years in and pull most of the investor money out, and you still own an asset that continues to appreciate in value. And at the end, you know, 6-7 years over the life of that project, you get to sell it and take an even bigger gain. But in any event, some people don't want to even learn how to compare and analyze and do some due diligence. And if that's your scenario, that's okay, but you're probably better off suited to the stock market, because there you essentially don't have to do a whole lot to participate, and yet you're going to be subject to the ups and downs, which are much more pronounced, much more frequent than they are in the rental real estate game. And the beauty about these real estate private partnership syndications that most of our clients invest in is it gives you an opportunity to participate in the growth of a significant asset while at the same time remaining passive, where you're not the one that has to go out and identify the property, do the due diligence on the property, get a loan on the property. All the things that I think some people may have gotten a bad taste in their mouth over time, if they had a rental property because they didn't understand how to do it right, they didn't have someone else actively engaged to take care of the location of the property, the due diligence in acquiring the property, getting the financing for the property, engaging leasing staff, maintenance folks to keep the property up to date. And that's, again, a significant part of the real estate private partnership syndication investor model. And, you know, you could be the active lead partner. I mean, there's no question. If you get involved in, say, one of the mentor groups that are around the country, and perhaps you invest passively for a period so you understand more about what's involved, and being a lead partner, well, then at some point you too could choose to lead a partnership in acquiring multifamily. But it's the point I'm trying to make is you have the ability to control more so than if you're buying Apple stock or AT&T or any of the other public stocks. You won't have a chance to consult with or otherwise advise, etc., participate in the company's operations. You'll never, ever speak to the CEO of most major companies. And with the apartment business, it's maybe it's not exactly the reverse, but Let's just say there's many, many more opportunities for you to understand the property, to understand the management team, to go walk the prospective property or other properties to learn about how multifamily properties are shaped and molded into income-producing assets. And so in a much more real sense, you are controlling your money, and you've got a more immediate response to changes that go on with the property. I'm going to define a little bit more closely what REPs are, real estate private partnership syndications. They involve multiple investors passively pooling their funds in a partnership that all occurs as a result of the U.S. SEC or Securities Exchange Commission crowdfunding statute that came out, I don't know, I think 2012 was probably the seed or the where it germinated, and then it's been enhanced and I guess made more flexible over the years. But it's where a sponsor or syndicator, lead partner, these are interchangeable terms, serves as the manager who's responsible for choosing a property, performing due diligence, and arranging its acquisition, including undertaking the necessary debt placement and equity raise involved. The manager's role is also tasked with managing the ongoing operations of the partnership and its assets throughout its existence. You are never going to get, if you're a passive investor, you will never ever expect to receive a phone call from a tenant, not just during the middle of the night, but at any time during the day. That's what the lead partner and staff are designed for. They're going to handle having leases generated, evictions undertaken, tax returns prepared, and you're going to participate passively where you are provided reports to understand what's going on. There typically will be investor group calls or group meetings, and you should receive distributions periodically. It varies. Some partnerships do that monthly. Some do it every 6 months. Some may do it once a year. One that I'm in is it has no distributions until the exit. 5 years out is when we expect to see our one and only distribution. So it runs the gamut. And part of the $50,000 question, as it were, when you're looking at these creatures, is understanding what this specific opportunity consists of and what the math is that's projected on that venture, so that you understand whether it fits your unique circumstances. If you're a retiree, you're coming up on retirement, and you need monthly income to pay your bills, well, then obviously you wouldn't choose to invest in a project like I did, where I'm willing to wait 5 years because I'm not in the position of needing the monthly income. And I have the ability to say, fine, you know, let's let this project mature. Let's let it get more valuable. And then we sell as a group 5 years down the road. In any event, our role as CPAs is such that we do not sell investments, nor do we recommend or promote specific investments, syndicators, sponsors, or lead partners. Rather, we assist your understanding in all cases of what you're signing up for regarding opportunities that you may be considering. We'll show you how to evaluate sponsors, opportunities, and private placement offerings so that you can select projects which may achieve the highest odds of a favorable outcome. That's pure and simple what we do. And I get phone calls all the time wanting to know about something they heard on the air, and you know, how many partners do you folks need, etc. That's not our role. And I would suggest to you We may or may not be willing to refer you to the syndicator involved, because it depends on which section of the statute that project is offered under. And in some cases, you can't learn about it if you're not already connected to that syndicator. So you got to get out ahead, and if you're not an accredited investor, meaning you don't have a net worth of at least $1 million, or you don't earn a minimum of $200,000 to $300,000 a year in income, you're non-accredited, and you cannot be marketed or solicited into an investment. You can sign up on a syndicator's portal and develop a relationship generally, so that when a specific opportunity arises, you may be able to participate. So if you're contemplating these types of investments, check with us, and we'll help you understand how these rules work. And at some point, we may be engaging with you to help you understand the math. If you're accredited, meaning you do have a higher net worth and or income annually, then you are much more free to invest in opportunities that you may hear about, because you can be advertised or solicited to. And you may choose to invest in opportunities. You'll still need to connect with the syndicator, obviously, but you won't be prohibited from participating in something that I might tell you about today, or you might hear about on the radio. You can undertake those investments if you're accredited. So in any event, we're always happy to discuss your unique facts and circumstances in an effort to help you better understand, again, what you're signing up for. Let's see if we have time for one more article. I think we're coming up on the end of the show here. Calculating valuations beyond cap rates, second article on the list. I'm just going to introduce this article. We'll pick it up Thursday. A funny thing happened on the way to the loan department. Someone asked for a property valuation, and nobody could agree on what it should be. So I'm going to leave it right there, and we'll come back and discuss on Thursday why lenders are still wary about financing commercial real estate. Thank you for tuning in today. Enjoyed it as always. And we'll look forward to the Thursday show at 2 p.m. right here on AM 700 KSEV. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.